Welcome to the Bent Biblios podcast, where we chat with authors, book lovers, and each other about books, trends, writing, and so much more. I'm Tegan.
And I'm Ashley. We are so excited to spend this time with you and to be a part of such an inclusive and incredible community.
We are here today with Abby Endler, creator of the incredible crime fiction blog, Crime by the Book.
Abby, welcome. We're so excited to have you here with us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting. I'm thrilled to be here.
Before we begin chatting, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So my name is Abby Endler, and I'm the creator of Crime by the Book, which is a crime fiction review website and Instagram account. That's my kind of passion project and hobby. And by day, I'm a senior publicist for a division of Penguin Random House here in New York.
Excellent. If you had to describe yourself in three words, what would they be?
Oh, this is tricky. I would say I'm enthusiastic, I'm driven, and I think I'm kind.
That's a hard question, Tegan. I was thinking about that too. I'm like, I don't know how I would describe myself.
It's really hard. It really is. Also, because it feels weird to describe yourself, like to brag on yourself a little bit feels a little bit weird, I would say.
Yes, but we all need to do that more.
Yeah, it's true. It's an important skill.
So when did your love of reading begin in general? And then when did your passion for crime fiction begin?
I have loved reading, honestly, for as long as I can remember. And I have to give a ton of credit to my parents for kind of instilling that love of reading in me from when I was a really small kid. I mean, they were always, you know, reading to me. My dad in particular would read to me every night growing up. And he actually kind of inadvertently introduced me to mysteries with the Boxcar Children mysteries. Those were like my favorite when I was really small. And then I would say my love of crime fiction in particular really developed when I was just a little bit older, reading on my own. And my mom had this box of all of her old Nancy Drew books that she had from when she was a kid. And I remember kind of stumbling upon the box. It was up in our attic. And I just fell in love with Nancy Drew and with those mysteries. And it kind of evolved from there. And I think I had something of a kind of stereotypical, maybe kind of journey into adult crime fiction. I went from Nancy Drew to Agatha Christie, and then I graduated from Agatha Christie into some of those contemporary thriller writers like James Patterson, Patricia Cornwell, and then really my love of the genre just grew from there.
Did you ever read Trixie Belden? Because that was like the other Nancy Drew series, but my dad kept getting me Trixie Belden, but a lot of people don't know that
one. I've heard of it, but I've never read it. I was very, very devoted to Nancy Drew. I was like Nancy Drew or bust when I was little.
That's fair. And I did the other ones were Enid Blyton, like the Famous Five and all that, where they would solve mysteries, but they always had ginger beer. Have you ever tried real ginger beer before?
I have. Yeah, I have.
Not what I was expecting.
No, not at all. But I really liked it when I had it. It was great.
Yeah, it is good. I had a little like, it was iced tea and ginger beer mixed together. It was quite good. Ashley, you should try it. You might like it. It might be a good way to like have ginger beer where it doesn't feel like fire.
Kind of wishing I had that right now. That sounds really good.
Yeah, it was really, really good. So I know crime fiction is definitely your go-to, but what do you like to read outside of crime fiction?
Oh my gosh. Everyone asks me this question. And I feel like people expect me to have like a hidden secret that like I'm actually obsessed with another genre or something. It's not the case. I genuinely, when it comes to reading for fun, I only read crime fiction. And people, the follow-up question is always, don't you get bored of it reading so many crime books, you know, back to back? But I think my experience has just been that the crime fiction genre encompasses so much. Like one day I could be reading, you know, more of a traditional detective novel. And the next day I'm reading a domestic suspense story. And the next day I'm reading a heist thriller. There's just so much that fits within the genre. So for me, I never get bored of it. You know, I feel like there's always new facets of the genre for me to be exploring or exciting new writers who are pushing the genre in interesting new directions. So for me, it's crime fiction all the time when it comes to reading for fun. But the caveat is that I do work in publishing for my day job, and I do work with a lot of crime writers. That is kind of the main focus of my job as well. But I, of course, work across genres too. So I am reading a bit outside of crime fiction for work.
And I feel like too, there's so many different stories and so many different ways to tell stories that everybody has like a fresh or interesting take. Definitely. On So there's so many options. And there's also other elements, like there's romantic suspense. Like, totally. I feel like crime fiction is one of those genres that I don't think that anyone can say they don't like it. They just haven't found what they like yet.
I 100% co-sign, endorse that. Absolutely. And I think what you said is so true as well, that, you know, I really love, like, for example, recently there've been a lot of locked room inspired mysteries coming out. I personally really love seeing the way different authors put their own unique spin on a premise that might sound like something you've read before. Like, I think it's really exciting and cool to see how two authors can start with a similar concept, you know, a family stranded on an island or something like that. And they can just take it in such different directions.
Absolutely. And so you touched on it a bit. So your passion for books has led you to a career in publishing, which I find so interesting. What does a typical workday at your publishing job look like?
Absolutely. So one of the things I love about my publishing job, and just to preface this, so I'm a senior publicist for Division of Penguin Random House, which means that it's basically my job to get attention for the books that I'm working on. Every season, I'm assigned a list of books and I pitch review coverage of those books. I pitch author interviews to media outlets, to podcasts like yourself. I arrange author events or virtual events for my authors. And something that I think really attracted me to this job, well, there's two things that really attracted me to the job. One is that no two days are ever exactly alike, kind of depending on the stages that your projects are in, you're going to be doing all different kinds of things. And I really enjoy that. And the other thing that attracted me to the job is just, I love this idea of connecting readers with books in a really organic way. And that's what I feel like is kind of the core of the work I'm doing. So a typical workday for me, it's lots of emails. So many emails. It's probably, you know, I'm going to be focusing on pitching review coverage for a book I have coming out in a couple months. Maybe I'm going to be corresponding with bookstores or libraries to set up events for my authors. Maybe I'm going to be talking with one of my authors about, you know, brainstorming pitch angles for their book, or working on what kind of materials do we want to put together to include in my pitches. It's a really fun job because there's just so many different kind of creative components of it. And you get to work really closely with the authors on, you know, the best ways to get their books in front of readers, which I really love.
So what would you say most people would not anticipate that you do in your day job? Like, what would surprise people, you think, that maybe surprised you when you started?
That is a really great question. The number one thing that surprised me, I would say there's a lot of emotional kind of care that goes into the job I'm doing when it comes to how you're working with your authors. You know, the book that you're working on, it's not just a product. I mean, it is, it's something that you're selling, but it's someone's baby. You know, they've poured so much of themselves into it. So there really is a lot of, I'm not, hand-holding is the wrong word, but there's this element of, you know, emotional care that goes into the publicist role, I think, where you really are responsible for something that has such emotional significance for the person who created it. And now it seems obvious to me, but I guess I didn't anticipate that part of the job because I was just thinking more about the, you know, the tasks like emailing out pitches or mailing out books or whatever. I wasn't anticipating that emotional aspect of it. I always joke with my colleagues that I think that all book publicists should have to undergo some sort of, like, you know, psychology intensive, or maybe a therapy course or something like that, just so we're better equipped, because, you know, there are times when you're going to have a challenging conversation with an author. Maybe a bad review comes in and that is, you know, hurtful, of course, to the writer. So it's your job to be able to help your author through those moments. And I think that was a piece of the job that I didn't anticipate, but I actually really love, and I'm honored that I get to be a part of that process and be there to support my authors as they're going through all of this.
So moving on now to Crime by the Book, your amazing blog. It has won the Writer's Award for Best Book Blog 2017, FeedSpot's Top 50 Crime Novel Blogs, and more. How did Crime by the Book come about?
Oh my gosh, I was just saying before we started recording here that it's really cool to be able to reflect on all of this. I don't often get the chance to sit and think about how Crime by the Book came to be and how it's evolved and everything. So Crime by the Book started way back in the day. I had just graduated college. I really wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with my career. I thought that I wanted to go to law school, but I decided I wanted to work for a little bit. So I was working as a production editor for a legal reference book publisher. And this job involved, it was very, very solitary. You know, you're looking at formatting of the books. I was doing some proofreading and copy editing as well. And it was a wonderful job. I'll preface all of this by saying my colleagues were so nice. I learned so much in this job. It was a great kind of first step out into the real world after college. But I quickly discovered that this sort of very solitary work just was not for me. And I needed a creative outlet, something that I could just pour my energy and enthusiasm and passion into. And I've, you know, like I said, I've been a crime reader for as long as I can remember. It's always been something that I was excited about and passionate about. And I really just hoped that I could, you know, start a little corner of the internet where I could maybe meet some other like-minded people, just connect with other people who love crime books as much as I do. And that is kind of how Crime by the Book was born. And it just sort of grew and evolved very organically from there.
Yeah, Ashley and I love the community of Bookstagram and everything. And that was one of the reasons we started too, is just to be part of that community is so rewarding. And we've like met amazing people like you, and it's just a lot of fun.
It's so wonderful. It's such a genuine corner of the internet. I feel like it's been just the best decision I've made to join that community and kind of get involved.
Yeah, because there's so many things on the internet that are not always fun and loving. You can get into like Twitter and stuff where it like sometimes you get really like, but here it's just it's just like really fun, and you're sharing things about like books that mean a lot to you, or that are just, it's just fun.
It is. And it's cool because you end up having these wonderful conversations with people who you'll probably never meet in real life. And you certainly never would have crossed paths with otherwise. But when you're all coming together over like a shared interest, I think that you end up just forging these really unexpected and fulfilling friendships. It's really cool.
So you've been doing this for 6+ years now. Congratulations. How do you think you've evolved the most over the years? And what is your proudest moment so far?
Oh my gosh, this is such a good question. I mean, I think that I've evolved honestly just in my own confidence over the years. Like I think when I started Crime by the Book, I mean, obviously I've always been passionate about these books, but I think anytime you're putting yourself out there on the internet or just out there in any capacity, whether you're a blogger, a podcaster, an artist, a creative, like I think there's an amount of vulnerability that comes along with that, even if you're just posting about crime books, which is all I'm doing. But I mean, I think there's an amount of vulnerability that comes along with that. And you just learn to have confidence in yourself, you know? And I think that I've definitely come out of my shell thanks to Crime by the Book. I think I was much more introverted when I started this account. And I think it really has kind of helped me just become a bit more self-assured. And it's given me amazing opportunities to stretch myself, you know, whether that's conducting an author interview or, you know, I traveled abroad solo for the first time because I found a book festival that I wanted to attend. And I thought, well, I'm going to go for it. Like this would be a cool thing to cover on Crime by the Book. So I did it. And I think that I've really gained a lot of confidence through this account and the ways that it's pushed me. And the second part of your question was moment I'm most proud of, right? I think this is maybe very cheesy, but I genuinely feel like I'm the most proud when I have conversations with people over Instagram or email or whatever it is, people who say that, you know, my account helped them fall in love with reading again, helped them rediscover their love of reading. I feel like that it's such a simple thing. And there are, you know, there are other like moments I could point to, specific author interviews that meant a lot to me, milestone, things like that. But I think genuinely I started this account because I wanted to share my love of books and I wanted to hopefully inspire people to pick up these books that I was so passionate about. So when I have those conversations with people, it just validates all the hard work. You know, it validates the past 6.5 years and everything that's gone into it. It means the world to me.
And there is a special kind of magic, I feel like, when you do have like those conversations and you introduce someone to a book and in any genre, they come back to you, they're like, I read it and I loved it. And it was just, you know, it just, Tegan and I met working in a bookstore. And one of our jobs was literally to help people find new reads. And there was always a moment, especially with like teenagers, because they were always the hardest, the most challenging. So we just, you know, we took that challenge, but when you found something and then they would come back a few weeks later and be like, you know, I really like that. Do you have something else like that? It was just the best feeling in the world.
It really is the best because we're all in this because we genuinely love books. And because I'm sure for each of us, we could point to a particular book or series of books or whatever that changed our lives in some way, or that was there for us at a moment when we needed that escape or we needed that comfort. So I think that being able to just feel like you've helped someone else discover the joy in reading or rediscover it, it's the best feeling.
Absolutely. And so you've mentioned before that a lot of the work that you do for Crime by the Book is done on weekends. So I don't think people always realize just how much work, and I know Tegan and I certainly did not, and we've only been doing this for a year and definitely not on your scale, but the blog posts, the photos, the Instagram management, and for you, the live author chats. I am terrified by anything live. I am very socially awkward. Editing is my best friend. So can you walk us through a typical work day for Crime by the Book?
Absolutely. Yeah. So like you said, I mean, I mostly these days, my weekends are pretty much devoted to Crime by the Book. When I started the account, you know, I think it was all on a smaller scale. Obviously, I was just starting out. There were less features in Instagram that you had to keep up with. You know, it was just all on a smaller scale. So I was kind of able to snap a photo, post it as I went, that kind of thing. But over the years, Crime by the Book has, you know, thankfully, and I'm very grateful for this, it has grown in so many ways that it really has started to take on kind of a life of its own. And it really does require a significant amount of planning in advance. So a typical, I'm going to say, quote unquote, work day for Crime by the Book, usually Saturday morning is my me time. I refuse to do anything first thing Saturday morning. That's my time to have a cup of coffee, sit quietly and read, and just kind of recover from the work week and get my head into the right space for the next round of work. So after that, I would say I usually Saturday early afternoon, I kind of do a giant brain dump of everything that I need to accomplish for Crime by the Book that weekend. I have this giant, got it here, giant notepad where I just write everything down. Then I start kind of organizing what I want to get done on Saturday versus Sunday. Then I usually spend Saturday afternoon kind of getting content for the week ahead. So recording reels for Instagram, taking photos for Instagram. If I have an Instagram Live author interview coming up on Sunday, then Saturday afternoon is also when I prep my questions, flip back through the book if I need to refresh my memory. And then Saturday evenings, I mean, I have been giving myself Saturday evenings off a little bit more lately because it was just a bit too grueling of a schedule and I just needed a little more me time. But Saturday evenings, if I'm going to do something for Crime by the Book, that's usually when I try to tackle something for my blog. And then Sundays usually come around. There's typically an Instagram Live author interview on Sundays, and then reading as well, because that's the other piece of things, is that if I'm not reading the books, then it doesn't matter if I have a pretty photo of them to share. I need to actually be able to say something about the book. So then I try to get a bunch of reading done on Sunday afternoons.
That's incredible. And that's intense. That is an intense work schedule.
I mean, it's a lot. Like, I really feel that Crime by the Book, I feel like it could almost be another job. I don't monetize it right now, so I don't know what that would look like, but I think there's enough work there that it could be at least like a part-time job. There's a lot to be done, and that, you know, and I do during the work week, and, you know, my morning commute, my commute home, if I'm going into the office that day, I am reading for Crime by the Book then as well. I'm trying to keep working on blog stuff or whatever in the evenings, trying to respond to Instagram DMs in the evenings. There's a lot of moving parts to it. But the week weekends are really when I try to make a lot of progress in terms of planning the week ahead, coming up with kind of the core content that I'm going to need for the week ahead.
That leads right into our next question, really. So how do you balance the work, blog, Instagram, life in general? Because I am in awe of all that you do and accomplish. I can't even figure out how to do one Instagram reel, and you just, they're just amazing.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not going to act like I'm like a pro at this. I really am not. It's always a work in progress. It's a huge balancing act. And I think, you know, the number one thing that I just try to keep in mind, well, there's two things. The first thing is that I think if you care about something, you're going to make time for it. And that's just been how I've kept Crime by the Book going. I really genuinely love it. I'm a happier person, my best self, when I feel like I'm, you know, tapping into that creative side of me and just engaging with the wonderful folks I talk to on Instagram and just feeling kind of tapped into all of that. But the other thing that I've kind of had to learn over the years of doing this is that if I want Crime by the Book to have longevity, which I do, it needs to be able to bend a little bit. So there are going to be times where, you know, my work schedule is such that I'm leaving work at a normal hour every day and not having to think too much about it after hours. And that's great. Then I can pour more into Crime by the Book. There are also going to be other times when maybe my work schedule is really hectic, or maybe I just have something in my personal life going on that deserves attention as well. And in that case, I just have to be okay with kind of easing up on Crime by the Book a little bit. So that's kind of how I'm trying to approach things. I am not perfect at this though, because I'm probably the first person to be hard on myself if I feel like I'm falling behind on goals I've set for Crime by the Book or something like that. I'm definitely kind of a perfectionist in that way, for better or worse. But I've been trying really hard, just kind of have the mindset of, I want Crime by the Book to have longevity. I will try to adapt and figure out how I can keep fitting it into my life as my life evolves. And that's kind of how I've approached it so far. It has been working. You know, I think there have definitely been times when I've been, you know, like right now, I would say I'm honestly behind on goals I had for my blog at the moment for like full length blog posts, but that's okay. You know, we're just going to keep trying and get back up on the horse. And I feel like I'm very lucky to have just a wonderful community on Instagram who, they are so kind. You know, if I've ever posted something in my stories, like, sorry, guys, I'm behind on this review. People are so kind and understanding. And I think that everyone gets it. It's like, this is a passion project. And at the end of the day, things have to be able to bend a little bit.
Yeah, that's very, very relatable. Cause there's just times in our lives where we're like, whoa, everything's happening at once. And you kind of go, okay, so that probably won't happen this week.
That's it.
Or like that post I planned on doing or that photo I planned on taking, I didn't get to it. And it's hard sometimes, but
it is. And I think it's, you know, it's easy for me to sit here and say that, you know, it's, oh, give yourself that little breather. It's okay. You know, I totally beat myself up about stuff when I fall behind. So I'm not trying to pretend that this like comes easily for me or something like that. It's just, I just think it's reality, especially when, you know, you're doing something. This is not my full-time job. I love it. And it is such an important piece of my life. And I always want to do the absolute best that I can with it. At the same time, I do have to pay my bills and I have a full-time job that does that. So, you know, if something at work is demanding more of my time, that's okay. It is what it is. Or if you have a personal situation that arises, I mean, we're only human. We're all doing the best we can.
Absolutely. That's what I told them. I'm like, you're doing your best.
That's
it. You're doing best, Tegan.
That's it. And that's like, all you can do, honestly.
Exactly. So you've met and talked with so many amazing and talented authors. Is there one that you have not interviewed yet that you would love to chat with?
Oh boy. Okay. There are a couple. I was thinking about this. I think my answer would have to be Alex Michaelides, who wrote The Silent Patient and The Maidens. I have not yet managed to secure an interview with him, and I've got so many questions for him. So I would love to speak with him someday. Same with S.A. Cosby, who wrote Razorblade Tears and Blacktop Wasteland, two incredible thrillers. And I also have not managed to get him for an interview yet, but fingers crossed, those are two authors I would really love to speak with.
I think it would be super interesting to talk about. I've only read Razorblade Tears but it was extremely interesting. So I could see that being a really, really cool author chat.
Such a powerful story. I feel like some books just like lend themselves so well to a discussion, and that book is one of them. It's such a powerful read.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, whoa. Like I could see some, like, even if somebody didn't like the book, I think they would still want to
absolutely
talk about it. Cause it is extremely good. Like it's very well written. It's kind of like if someone's taste in music is in that book, they could still be like, yeah, but that's really good book. It just wasn't for me. If that makes
sense. Absolutely. It's an objectively great book. So I think that there's so much to discuss there.
Absolutely. So what would people who follow your blog and or Instagram page be most surprised to learn about you?
Oh man, that's hard. I have a feeling, I don't know. I kind of think people would be surprised to learn that I'm kind of like a big softie. I feel like my whole, you know, my persona is all these dark crime books. And it's true. I mean, the darker the crime book, the better for me, but I'm kind of like a real softie underneath it all. And I think people might be a little surprised to know that. I don't know. I mean, I hope it comes across on Instagram that I'm a very, I think, very kind person, despite the dark, violent books that I'm reading and talking about. I think people might be surprised to learn that though.
I love, like, I started my thriller reading with lighter thrillers, domestic thrillers, nothing too dark. But as I started reading your blog and seeing people posting about like Nordic noir, they're really gritty and they can get like really, really dark. And I remember the first couple, I love it, but I wasn't expecting it. And I'm like, holy Christmas. But it's just, it hooks you. Cause now you're just like, I want those lighter thrillers for when it's fun and I just want something light. But I will just get a hankering for those darker.
Absolutely. Behind me here, this is my Nordic noir bookcase here. So I completely agree. They're so dark and atmospheric. I just love them.
Mm-hmm. Segueing into our next question, on your blog, there's an incredible resource for people wanting to dive into Nordic noir. And I highly recommend checking it out. I didn't know about it as a subgenre. So that's a fantastic resource for everyone to look at. But can you give us a brief explanation of what Nordic noir is for people who are new to the genre.
Yeah, absolutely. So my favorite thing to talk about, Nordic noir is crime fiction coming from Scandinavia, but very important caveat, not all crime books from Scandinavia are Nordic noir. So Nordic noir novels are typically books that have a traditional police procedural structure. So they're following a detective who's usually quite a damaged detective. You know, you've got the alcoholic or someone who's haunted by demons in his past or something like that. So you're following this detective through an investigation. These stories typically take place in an urban environment. So in cities, a lot of these books take place in Oslo or Stockholm or Copenhagen, and they are all kind of defined by, you alluded to it earlier, this gritty atmosphere. There's kind of this mood of melancholy and dread that sort of steeps these stories. So, so atmospheric. I really, really love it. It's kind of this subgenre that I sort of stumbled into almost accidentally. And I just realized it was kind of my dream genre. So I've been reading as much of it as I can possibly get my hands on ever since then.
As someone who reads a lot of different types of crime fiction, what trope or writing device would you say you're most critical of or have higher expectations of?
Oh man, another excellent question. I think I have become critical, not that I dislike them, but I've become a little bit skeptical of psychological thrillers that are marketed as having the most mind-blowing twist ever. I think we've seen, you know, there was such a trend, and there still is such a trend of thrillers that seem to kind of entirely hinge on whether or not the author can pull off this, you know, mind-blowing twist. And I love that when it's done well, but I think unfortunately, a lot of the time it seems like books really do, like they kind of do hinge on that, where there isn't all that much, that sounds too critical, where there might not be, you know, all that much going on in the story if you do guess the twist. And I think I'm a little bit skeptical of that. I'm a reader for whom a great twist is kind of a cherry on top, but I don't need that in a thriller. I think that thrillers can have so much more to offer beyond that. So that's something that I am a little bit skeptical of, a little wary whenever I see a book being promoted as having the most mind-blowing twist ever. I'm a little bit like, okay, we'll see about that. We'll see. That's definitely one of them. And I would say another kind of trope that I'm just a little bit skeptical of possibly is kind of the domestic suspense with a cheating spouse. I would say I've just seen so much of it at this point that I'm not necessarily, it's not going to sell me on a book. Like I could certainly read a book that has that element to it and really enjoy it, but that element alone is not necessarily going to draw me to a book.
Yes. And I feel like almost every thriller now is marketed just exactly like that with the surprise twist. And I'm not a person who, I don't really try to figure out what's happening as I'm reading a story. So I'm usually surprised. I'm not very hard to please. But
I mean, I'm the same way. I have never been a reader who's trying to like solve the mystery before the characters. I really love to just be along for the ride and see what journey the author wants to take me on. So I feel like with that being said, if I do manage to figure out a twist in advance, I'm kind of like, I don't know. Like if I figured this out, I think a lot of people are going to figure it out.
Same. I'm right there with you. So what do you look for in a good book review? Because there are so many different types of book reviews and so many different formats. What makes a good book review for you?
I would say, first of all, obviously, no spoilers in a book review is crucial. I mean, when I have read a couple where I've been spoiled because of the review, and that's just such a bummer, honestly. So no spoilers is thing number one. And I would say the second quality is I really just love when I feel like the reviewer's personality comes through. You know, I can read a plot summary for a book on the publisher's website or the author's website or, you know, whatever. I really love when I feel like I'm getting like a personal glimpse into why this story was uniquely exciting for that reader. And I think that what's really fun about social media is that, you know, you can find readers out there whose tastes align with yours. And you know, if this person liked it, you're likely to like it as well. Or, you know, you can also find people who have completely opposite tastes from you and you can read their perspective and appreciate their perspective. And I really enjoy that. So I think for me, I get the most out of a book review when I feel like I'm getting that personal glimpse into, you know, why a book resonated for someone else.
Absolutely. And on the topic of social media, do you have any advice for people looking to start a book blog or a bookstagram of their own?
Absolutely. I have practical advice and I have less than practical advice. I'll start with the practical. I would say, you know, it's very obvious, but post about what you're genuinely passionate about. I think that sometimes it can feel like there's pressure to post about, you know, the hot new releases, or the buzziest book that everyone's talking about. And of course, that's completely valid if you want to do that. But I would say, you know, if you don't go into something with a genuine passion for it, you're going to burn out because it's a lot of work. Like we've said, there's a lot of work that goes into this. So I think stick with what you're passionate about. You know, don't feel shy to post about if you love one genre in particular. Like, don't feel shy. Don't feel like you have to talk about other things. Talk about what you really love. And I would say that kind of does segue into my less practical piece of advice. Oh, wait, another practical piece of advice before I move on. Don't feel like you only have to post, you know, books you've just purchased. When I started out, I was posting about books that I already had in my collection. I was kind of just sharing older books that I loved. And I feel like that was actually a great way to get my feet wet a little bit, to practice, to find my own voice, and to just start sharing with other people, you know, what my taste in books is. Because like I was saying earlier, that's the best when you can find people who have similar tastes that you have, and you can chat about the books you're reading and just kind of share recommendations and everything. So there's absolutely no shame in posting about, you know, books you borrow from the library, books you've had in your collection for years. You don't need to only be posting about the hot new buzzy releases, unless that's something you want to do, in which case absolutely go for it. And I would say my less practical piece of advice just kind of ties into what I was saying earlier, but this sounds so cheesy, but really just be authentic to yourself, because I think that it's so easy in the world of social media to fall into the traps of comparing yourself to others. And that really is just like a surefire way to burn yourself out very, very quickly. So just be authentic to yourself, and, you know, don't feel like you have to do things a certain way just because you see other people doing it that way.
Yeah, definitely. Like, a lot of the books I'm reading have been out for a while because when I got out of I'm so grateful that Ashley asked me to do this, because I was in like years long reading slump because I had two kids. I was just, I'd try and pick up a book, I'd get distracted, like tired.
Yeah, and absolutely. So
this motivated me to get back to reading, which I've always loved books. And so once I got back into it, I felt like behind because there was all these books that I wanted to read. I'll always feel behind with reading because there's just so many good books. And then I also am a thrift shopper. So like for me, new releases are not all about that, because I like going and finding books I'm a thrifty shopper. I like to find a deal.
I think that's awesome. And that also, I mean, if you're thinking about it from the perspective of someone just starting out, that serves a purpose, you know, for other readers out there as well, because there are plenty of folks out there who don't want to spend money on a brand new hardcover, you know, every week. Heck, I'm one of them. Absolutely. Like I recently got a Kindle, and I'm always looking for Kindle deals now because it's like my new favorite thing. If I can get a book that I've been wanting to read for 99 cents on my Kindle, that's amazing. So I think there's so many different ways to approach book blogging or Bookstagram. And I think that's kind of the beauty of it.
And to expand on what Tegan said, so when we first started this, it was kind of during lockdown. And like I said, we had met at a bookstore. We loved going to book events and meeting authors and talking to them, and all that was suddenly taken away. So we're like, you know, what can we do? And I approached her about it. And Tegan and I we have some similar reading tastes, but we also can veer quite far off. So it's always interesting to be reading the same book and chatting about it and seeing completely different perspectives on it.
Yeah.
And then as for your piece of advice about staying authentic, I love that, because one of the things that Tegan and I wanted to do from the very beginning was just have our Instagram and our podcast just kind of be like, you're hanging out with a couple of girlfriends on a Friday afternoon or whenever people listen to this, and just have it be approachable and welcoming. And we are our quirky, awkward selves.
I love that. I mean, the world needs more of that though. You know, I don't think there's really any space anymore I just think there's not a need anymore, I should say, for people to be pretending to be, you know, perfect, just for the sake of presenting themselves a certain way on social media or something. Like, we all know that's not the case. I think it's so beautiful when people are able to just be themselves and express themselves exactly how they want to. And I love that the book community online has given so many people, you know, an opportunity to do that.
Absolutely. Like I jokingly told my boss's boss, I was like, my hashtag would be like being awkward since 1988. Like, it just,
I
like,
love it.
That's my hashtag. If I had to do like hashtag for myself, it would be that.
I love it. Totally love it.
So if you were to write a book, what do you think would include in terms of plot elements and setting, and what could readers expect out of your novel?
Oh my gosh, I love this question. So I don't know if I ever will write a book. I think that people often assume that I'm, you know, scheming on writing a thriller or something. I don't have any ideas for a thriller right now. That being said, if I were to write a book, I feel like it could go so many directions in my head right now. I'm like, on the one hand, I could absolutely see myself writing just like a super dark serial killer thriller, like something that I would personally really love to read. I'm sure that any book I write would have, you know, a protagonist who's something like me, kind of an ordinary, you know, young woman in her late 20s. I could see a thriller, maybe a psychological thriller with that kind of protagonist, maybe something that really delves into mental health and mental illness. That's something that's really important to me. That could be kind of another element that informs a book I write. Or I could write, you know, maybe a book about, I don't know, a New Yorker who goes overseas to Oslo and gets caught up in a mystery over there. Like, I think there are so many different directions I could take a book, but no plans right now to write a thriller. And obviously, if I ever do want to write a thriller, I need to refine my pitch quite a lot.
Well, I think those are lots of good ideas. I'd be very excited to see what you would come up with. And one of the, not the most important by any means, but one of the aspects of writing a book is the cover. The cover always draws me in. I'll read a book. If the cover's not pretty, I'll still read it because it's the story that I want. But my eye does get caught by a good cover or photo. So what makes a really good photo, like a bookstagram or blog photo for you? What stands out?
I think my favorite photos are those where I can immediately tell who took the photo before I've even looked at, you know, the handle of the user or the caption or anything like that, where people have a distinctive style. You know, one of my favorite accounts that I follow on Instagram is Guaranteed Reads, and he does these amazing castings. He, you know, reads a lot. He reads across genres, but he focuses on thrillers definitely. And he does these awesome like collages on Instagram where he will share his dream casting. If he were to, you know, if there were to be a movie adaptation of that book, I love that because when I'm scrolling through Instagram, like I immediately know that's one of Gare's photos, and that I just love so much. So I think that's probably the number one thing that appeals to me. And again, just goes back to people being authentic, you know, and doing what feels right for them, you know, what excites them creatively. And I think that's probably what makes a great bookstagram photo for me. I will say also in terms of book covers themselves, I think high contrast book covers look really great on Instagram, like covers where, you know, the little details really pop. I think those make for beautiful books to be photographed.
I know exactly what Instagram account you're talking about. And I love it. I will link it in the show notes for everyone. And Hollywood needs to take note because the talent in like his casting is incredible.
It's incredible. And have you seen, so he does these, he started doing, I think he calls them Feature Film Fridays, if I'm getting that right, where he creates a movie poster for a book adaptation. They are so good. Every single one that he posts, I'm just in awe. They're so good. So everyone should definitely go check out at Guaranteed Reads on Instagram. He's also just an absolutely wonderful person, but I feel like he's so talented. Someone needs to scout him and hire him immediately.
Absolutely. So you have been on multiple panels and Iceland Noir is one of them. For our listeners who may not know what Iceland Noir is, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, absolutely. So Iceland Noir is this amazing crime fiction festival that takes place every other year in Reykjavik, Iceland. So it actually, right now it's taking place every year because they're making up for some missed time with COVID, but it's wonderful. It's this incredible, it's a relatively small festival, all focused on crime fiction, not just from Scandinavia, but there are a lot of Scandinavian authors in attendance. There's also always a lot of authors from the UK and some authors from the States as well. It's absolutely wonderful. I've been going, 2016, 20, this was my third Iceland Noir that I went to this past year, which was wonderful. And I'll be back again this fall. It's the best.
Is it in November?
It is. Yep. Okay. It's in November in Reykjavik. I think the dates this year, it's like mid-November this year. It's usually right before Thanksgiving here for us here in the States.
Yeah. I know. I always forget that because we're Canadian. And then I'm like, oh yeah, you haven't had your Thanksgiving yet.
I know. No, but Iceland Noir, it's amazing. And it's, I should have also mentioned, it's actually started by a group of crime writers from Iceland. So people might recognize the names like Ragnar Jónasson, Yrsa Sigurðardóttir. They are some of the founders of this festival. And it's super impressive. It's grown so much over the past couple of years. And this coming fall, the lineup is truly insane. They have, and just some of the biggest names in crime writing are going to be at this festival. It's incredible.
Awesome. So what are you looking forward to most at the upcoming festival?
I can't say the thing I'm actually looking forward to the most, but I will say, if anyone knows my taste in books and authors, if you look at the Iceland Noir lineup, one of my like top authors who I just completely fangirl over is going to be at the festival, and I may or may not be doing a spotlight interview with her as part of the festival, which I am just so excited about. I can't actually say what it is just yet, but it's going to be so much fun. I'm so looking forward to it. And I think just in general, the lineup this fall really is absolutely amazing. Some of like the biggest names in UK crime writing are going to be there. Of course, the biggest names in Icelandic crime writing. So it's really, really exciting.
I'm very intrigued now. I can't wait.
I feel like people are going to guess very quickly if you look at the lineup, because this is an author who I just like fully fangirl over all the time. But I'm really, really excited.
I love it. So what is one of your favorite memories of Iceland Noir so far?
Oh my gosh, there have been so many great ones. I mean, I would say my favorite memory would honestly have to be from the very first time I went in 2016. I was, you know, still very new to Crime by the Book. I think I had just started my account, you know, maybe 5 months, 6 months earlier, if that math adds up. I was really nervous. You know, I'd never done anything like this before. I had no connections to anyone there. I was a fan of a lot of the authors who were going to be participating. I was a fan of the authors who had founded it. And I was talking to my Grammy, who's like my best friend. I love her so much. And she was really just encouraging me, you know, just go for it. Just take the leap. Why not? You know, it's fine. Like you'll be safe. You'll be with good company and just try it. And I did. And it was the most rewarding experience ever. I made such wonderful friends at that first, you know, my first time at the festival, people who've stayed my real friends, you know, true real life friends, not just even online friends, but people I've kept in touch with ever since. And I think that's something else that I really appreciate about the festival is that it is just very warm and welcoming. It's not, you know, it's a smaller festival, so it's not super intimidating. Everyone is so kind. I went with literally no connections. Crime by the Book was very new. And no one really knew what it was at that point. And they just welcomed me with open arms. It was wonderful. So that was really great. And then this past fall when I was there, I got to moderate a couple of panels, which was fantastic. I got to do a super fun panel that was all about Nordic noir, which obviously is right up my alley. And then I got to do a spotlight interview with Sherry LaPena, which was so great. So those were some really, really wonderful memories as well.
That's lovely. Yeah. I would be so nervous too. Oh, but yeah. Like, but obviously the payoff is going and being part of something wonderful like that. So
that's awesome. I don't know what it is, but crime writers, they're like the loveliest people. I have this working theory that it's because they get all of their aggression out in their writing. So then in real life, they just get to be so kind because generally, I mean, they did not need to be as kind to me as they were. I was not, you know, not that I think I'm like someone now, but I did not have any sort of following online. Like I really didn't. And they just welcomed me with open arms. It was so special.
That's awesome. So another hard question. I apologize. One book that you feel that everyone should read or at least try?
This is actually a relatively easy question because I think everyone should read an Agatha Christie book. She is the queen of crime for a reason. Her plots are unmatched. Her books are not super dark or violent. So if you're nervous about that kind of thing, you know, her books are definitely on the gentler side. Although some of her plots do get pretty sinister, but they're not bloody or gory or anything like that. So I would have to recommend her book, And Then There Were None. I think it's her best-selling book. It is kind of her best known. And again, for a reason. She just crafts this incredible locked room mystery. It all begins with this group of strangers receiving these mysterious letters that invite them to an island. And when they get there, no spoilers, but they do begin to die one by one. And it's a book that has informed so many of kind of the big contemporary suspense novels these days. So the influence of Agatha Christie's work in general, but this book in particular is very much being felt in the genre right now. And I think if people have not read an Agatha Christie, this is a great one to start with.
That is such a coincidence that you mentioned that, because I'm reading a book that's influenced by And Then There Were None.
Which
and
one?
So it hasn't been released yet. It's Never Coming Home. I believe I have that right. It's really good. But yeah, it's influenced by that. And I'm going, I didn't realize right away. I think, Ashley, I'm sorry, you may have told me, but I have a memory of a goldfish. So I started reading it. So by the time I'm reading it, I'm like, oh yeah, like think, but I haven't read. And then there were none. So I pulled it from a bookshelf because I've always meant to. So I promise I will read it.
You absolutely have to know. It's really cool because once you read it, you're going to see its influence in just so many books, especially over the past couple of years. There've been a whole slew of them. And this all goes back to what I was saying earlier, where I love it that so many people are taking inspiration from these classics and putting their own fresh spins on this kind of this story that's just been around for a while and been so popular for so long.
Absolutely. And it's Never Coming Home is by Kate Williams, and it's a YA novel, but yeah, it's really good. And memory, my notebook is my memory, so I hope I never lose that thing. Everything is written down, or it's just
right as someone there. Sitting next to her notepad right now. I totally get that.
Yeah, I usually have like active work, like to-do lists all over my desk at work. Like all people are like, oh, can you look into this? I'm like, sure, let me write that down because I will not remember. So I have a lot of notes everywhere. So I have a two-part question for you. First, do you have a favorite book to film adaptation? And secondly, is there any book that you hope they adapt someday for film or television?
Great question. And this is where Gare would be from Gare Indeed Reads. He would be the pro at answering this. My personal favorite book to film adaptation is probably Gone Girl. I thought that that was one of the rare book to film adaptations where I actually liked the movie better than the book, which is maybe a little bit heretical to say or something like that. But I thought that movie just was so great. I thought it just captured everything that made the book brilliant and then some. I really, really loved it. And in terms of a book I would like to see adapted, there are many, but I'm going to say I would like a redo on the adaptation of Joe Nesbø's The Snowman. Nesbø is my favorite author, Norwegian crime writer. And there was a adaptation of The Snowman that came out a couple years ago, and it was downright terrible, which is deeply painful for me to say because this is my favorite book of all time. Like I was invited, it was so nice. The publisher invited me to an early screening of the movie because they knew I was such a huge fan. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching it, and I was just like, what have they done to my favorite book? This is terrible. So I would love a redo on that one.
Oh no, that's so disappointing when that happens.
It's brutal.
And Gone Girl, I remember we worked at the bookstore, Tegan, when that released. And that was, I think, one of the first thrillers I read. And I just, that book is fantastic. If you haven't, I mean, it's pretty old now, but if you haven't read it, that ending.
Yeah. Read the book and then watch the movie because the movie is really great too.
Mm-hmm. And the actress did such a phenomenal job. Oh, I wasn't sure about the casting of Ben Affleck, but I ate my words at that.
Yep. It all worked. It really did.
Yeah. So what are a few of your most anticipated book release for the rest of this year so far?
Okay. I've got a ton. Let's see. Riley Sager, obviously one of my favorite authors, has a new book out on June 21st, The House Across the Lake, which is so good. It's his spin on kind of a Rear Window inspired thriller, something kind of like, Woman in the Window. But if you think you've read, enough of these books and you don't need another one, you've never read anything quite like the way Riley does this story. It's so good. It goes in a completely unexpected direction. I absolutely loved it. And Jennifer Hillier also has a new book out this summer. I believe it's out in July, if my memory serves right now, called Things We Do in the Dark. Jenny Hillier is an amazing, amazing talent. I feel like she's one of these writers who is poised for a breakout moment. She's just insanely gifted. And this book is so excellent. Highly recommend Things We Do in the Dark. I'm also excited about Catherine Ryan Howard's new book, Runtime, which is inspired by horror movies. That comes out this summer as well. And the last one I'll mention is Amanda Giatissa's You're Invited, which is out in August. If you love wedding thrillers, kind of like The Guest List, it's so good.
That's fantastic. And for our listeners, I will also be linking all of those in the show notes, so you don't have to remember right now. I'll put them all down there.
Thank you for doing you. That. I appreciate it.
So I don't know how I feel about admitting this, but I've never read a Riley Sager book. I own the first three, and there's no reason that I haven't read them other than just straight up TBR overwhelm. I have so many books. So I know you love Riley's books. Where should I start?
First of all, no judgment here whatsoever. The TBR overwhelm is very, very real. And I think we all have those books where we're like, I can't tell anyone I haven't read this. This is terrible. This has been sitting here for so long. So you mentioned you have the first three books of his. So I would say start with Final Girls. It was his first book that he wrote under the Riley Sager pen name. And it's so excellent. I mean, I think his books have improved as he's, you know, written more, which is great. That's what you would want, I think, as an author. But it's great. It gives you kind of the perfect encapsulation of his writing style. If anyone out there has not read Final Girls or heard of Final Girls, it's basically Riley's ode to the leading ladies of slasher films. Riley is a huge fan of slasher movies, the Scream franchise in particular. I'm also a huge fan of this movie genre, and the book is so good. So Final Girls is really great. I also love Lock Every Door, which is his third book. That one is awesome. Kind of Rosemary's Baby vibes set in this exclusive luxury apartment building in Manhattan.
Excellent. So you have read so many books. What novel, for lack of a better word, haunted you the most?
Oh, you guys have such great questions. This one is easy. So there's this book called The Crow Girl by Erik Axelsund, which people who have followed Crime by the Book probably are not surprised at all by this answer. It is the darkest, most disturbing book that I've ever read. It was originally published in Sweden as a trilogy. Again, me with my Nordic noir here. But it was originally published in Sweden as a trilogy. And here in the States, it came out in one giant volume. I think it's, you can see there's a big spine on my shelf. That's it. It's so, so good. It all begins with the discovery of this, this body that's mummified in a Stockholm city park. And it follows a detective as she's investigating the case and kind of peeling back all these layers of corruption in local government, in the police force. It is a brutal, brutal book. It deals very intensely with themes, including, you know, mental illness. There's a whole swath of dark content in this story. But I think the reason it haunted me so much, it's not even for the violence in the book, although there is lots of violence. I think it really is for kind of the intimate glimpse that the authors give readers into the mental state of some of the characters in this story and just the way that they're affected by, you know, traumas from their past. It's an extremely powerful book. I was very fortunate to get to meet the authors a couple of times and just deeply impressed with everything about them and this story. It's one of my favorite books ever, and I will never, ever stop thinking about it. I really, really loved it. So if anyone out there, you know, is drawn to really dark stories, I don't recommend this one for everyone because it is just genuinely very heavy. But if you are drawn to that kind of story, like I am, it's impeccable.
Oh, I'm excited. And I respect books that explore mental illness well.
Yeah.
As someone with generalized anxiety disorder and agoraphobia, sometimes when I'm reading a book, I can be like, I don't know, it's not super accurate. I don't love it. But when it's done well, I think it adds so much. It adds to the conversation. It's fascinating to read about. So I'm very intrigued.
Yeah. And I don't want to say too much about it, but I was in a conversation with the authors where they spoke a little bit about, you know, why they wanted to explore specifically mental illness in the way they did in this book. And it was very much inspired by someone in their personal lives. It's two authors writing under a pen name and someone who they cared very much about, who was grappling with a lot. And they wanted to really kind of do their research and try to portray what this person they loved was going through. And I think that there's sort of this, there's just this really powerful arc in the story where I just felt that I could sense like the care, you know, that they had for the person who inspired this character and the care they had for the subject matter that they were portraying.
I'm definitely adding that to my TBR. And speaking of which, what are some of your favorite recent reads? I always love your recommendations, even though Tegan jokingly, my TBR I said is as tall as me. And she's like, Ashley, what are you talking about? It's like 10 times as tall. It's okay. It's all right. We're just not going to talk about all the unread books I have.
It's okay. We truly, truly all have it. Well, I think I mentioned Riley's new book, which I just read, which was so great. I also recently just read Catherine Ryan Howard's new book, Runtime, which was so great. I feel like anytime anyone asks me this question, my mind just immediately goes blank of all the books that I've recently read. But I would say the new Riley Sager is so excellent. The new Catherine Ryan Howard is so excellent. And I'm currently reading and really enjoying Rachel Housel Hall's new book, which will be out in July as well. She's another super talented crime writer. So check that one out as well. I haven't finished it yet. I've been so busy this weekend, but hopefully finishing it very soon, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I definitely have like full bookshelves of books that I haven't read yet, but that's okay. They are beautiful, and I like looking at books too.
Exactly. And then I somehow still buy more books, even though I've got all these books waiting to be read.
Yeah, I did that yesterday. I'm like, here's more.
That's it. You know, it's okay. I think book buying is a hobby in and of itself.
I was just going to say reading and collecting, two very distinct things.
Absolutely yeah. Agree.
I do both. Like basically one of the gifts I asked from my husband, I was like, build me a bookshelf that goes like across our bedroom wall. Like, and he's like, oh, I made it. You know, he made it. It was beautiful. And he's like, okay, now you can all get all your books out of storage and then you'll still be able to fill it with more books. And I was like, I filled it right away. Like I had a good laugh. I'm like, oh, that's adorable. I need another bookshelf. So sweet.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Immediately filled. He's like, oh, well, but it's a beautiful bookshelf and he did a great job.
It's very nice of him. Honestly, relationship goals right there. Have someone build a bookshelf for you. That's wonderful.
He built that one behind me. That's that like,
oh, that's so tree. Cool.
So he built that one too. I was like, here's another, build me another one. I want this. I just showed him on my phone.
I love it. That's amazing.
Yeah. So are you able to share anything that you are currently working on or planning?
I have something that I'm currently working on and I like hate to be that person who's like, oh, it's so exciting, but I can't tell you anything about it. There is something that is kind of in the works that I've been dreaming about doing for a very long time and kind of a project that the conversation had started about it kind of pre-COVID, and then COVID happened and everything just sort of ground to a halt, but it seems like it might be kind of picking back up again, which would be super exciting. And I'm also really looking forward in June. I have a couple of in-person events that I'm going to be doing, which is again, kind of a first. I mean, I was at Iceland Noir, but aside from that, I haven't really done anything in person since COVID. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to be actually teaching a little course at Thriller Fest here in New York in June, which will be very exciting. I'm teaching a course on book publicity and social media, which will be great. And then a little later in June, I am going to Houston to visit some friends. And I conveniently timed my trip to Riley Sager's in-person launch for his new book. So I'm going to get to be in conversation with him at a bookstore in Houston, which will be so much fun. So lots of good stuff to look forward to this summer. And hopefully I'll be able to share more about this other project very soon.
That sounds so exciting. Like in-person things, I'm not used to them anymore. Like when people are like, yeah, we'll have this in person. I work at a university and we're having in-person convocations for the first time in forever. And I've been almost there for 3 years and I'm like, this will be my first in-person convocation event. So I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, so it's a big deal to do in-person events now. Like, it's just like different.
It's so different. And I mean, I've been so grateful for, you know, virtual everything over the past few years. Like the fact that the whole world just pivoted so quickly and, you know, learned how to use Zoom and all of this, it's been amazing. And I've been so fortunate. I think that if it weren't for, you know, this technology, there are so many authors I never would have gotten to interview and folks, you know, like yourself, who I might not have gotten to connect with in the same way. So I'm so grateful for it. And I think I'm always going to love doing, you know, virtual events or Instagram live interviews and all of that. That's not going anywhere anytime soon, but it is really exciting just to think about being in a bookstore, you know, sitting with an author, chatting in front of a bunch of real life people. Like it's very exciting. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Definitely. I'm just so glad we have the, like you said, like the option of both, like
absolutely
the option of in-person before was just totally off the table. So it's nice to have the option. So to round off our chat, I've come up with a few this or that questions about books for you. First one, abduction or cult?
Cult.
Epic character or epic twist?
Epic character.
Standalone or series?
Oh, can I say both depending on my mood? I can't choose.
All right. We'll give you that one. multiple point of views or one unreliable narrator?
Multiple points of view.
Isolated location or urban location?
Isolated location.
Hard-boiled or soft-boiled detective?
As hard-boiled as possible.
I was like, I was looking it up. I'm like, I didn't know there was a term for the soft boiled. I'm like, yeah, like there is a lot of those out there. But anyways, I learned something when I was coming up with those questions.
I love it. Great, great questions. And yeah, I mean, I'm definitely the Nordic noir genre, my passion for that. It's like hard boiled detectives all the way.
Absolutely. Like Raymond Chandler is one of my dad's. They're usually pretty hard boiled.
Those are very hard boiled. Your dad should get into Nordic noir. Speaking of, that's...
He Probably has. He is the reason I like books so much, and I like having shelves of books around me, because we had our basement growing up was wall to wall, like all bookshelves. And then it's still like that, but it's in his garage. Plus, like every single of the three floors has bookshelves everywhere. And he mainly just reads mystery. So,
incredible. He probably has some Nordic crime fiction in his collection.
I'm pretty sure he has Joe Nesbo and all, like I'm pretty sure. I just can't like tell you all the authors, cause there's too many that he has, like, but he'll be like, oh, did you read this yet? No, I'm sorry, Dad. Like,
that's awesome. I love it. That's so great.
Yes. But Raymond Chandler, he's like, you got to read them. So I did. But yes. So thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. And I really, really appreciate you both taking the time to, you know, prepare all these awesome questions and for having me on. This was really, really great.
Thank you. So you can keep up to date with Abby by following her on Instagram at Crime by the Book and by visiting her website at www.crimebythebook.com. Abby even has a wonderful newsletter you can sign up for. All links will be provided in the show notes.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please leave us a review. It really helps.
Also, don't forget to visit us on Instagram to continue the conversation, be notified of bonus episodes, and keep up to date with what we are currently reading. We put up new episodes every other Friday.